Hello, and welcome to Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the Deities and Demigods supplement for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 1st Edition. And as I do, I'm talking about the gods, monsters, heroes, and mythological beings that I find in it, and how to use them, and religion and mythology more generally, in your fantasy role-playing games. In today's episode, we'll be looking at yet another deity from the Cthulhu Mythos section of the Deities and Demigods book. I have to apologize if this episode is a little slower paced, a little quieter, and maybe a little shorter than some of our more recent ones. As you can maybe tell from my voice, I have had a rough couple of weeks. I went and gave a talk in Edinburgh, which hopefully should be online before too long. I participated in a LARP, which uses a shouting-based system, so I did quite a lot of shouting then. And then I was working Salute, the UK's premier miniatures gaming convention, which was great, but on the other hand, a lot of shouting involved in making yourself heard in that noisy exhibition hall. So, in consequence, I've lost quite a lot of my voice. Now, the good news is that it's Easter holidays, so I'm not doing quite as much teaching, but still a fair amount. So I'm trying to take it easy on the pipes at present. Today's episode is all about Shub-Niggurath, the black goat of the woods with 1,000 young. And here we are confronted with a creature susceptible to a wide range of different interpretations. And the interpretation given in the Deities and Demigods book is merely one among many of them. And the reason for that is that Lovecraft presented this creature in a quite ambiguous way. Unlike someone like Nyarlathotep or even Cthulhu, Shub-Niggurath does not appear in any H.P. Lovecraft story, or at least not really. So Shub-Niggurath gets mentioned a lot in Lovecraft's fiction. Lots of people going, "Yah, Shub-Niggurath." You get that, for example, in The Whisper in Darkness, in The Dawn of Horror, in The Dreams in the Witch House. And Shub-Niggurath turns up in a little more detail in some of Lovecraft's revision stories. Lovecraft sometimes worked as a ghostwriter or reviser, taking stories that had been written by other people and reworking them, often really contributing the majority of the text. So Shub-Niggurath, insofar as this deity is described at all in Lovecraft, is described as a mother deity. At one point, he compares her to Astarte, or at another time, he actually says in Out of the Eons that Shub-Niggurath is actually a god well-disposed toward humanity, and has two sons who may be a pair of deities called Nug and Yeb. And in his letters, Lovecraft would sort of joke about Nug and Yeb frolicking around his house sometimes. Shub-Niggurath, in the work of later writers and in the Call of Cthulhu role-playing game, has acquired an association with monstrous fertility. And that makes sense because it's essentially an extrapolation from the only detail that we know about her. The only thing that we know about her is that she's a mother goddess and she's the black goat of the woods with 1,000 young, where 1,000 here meaning a lot. So this is a mother goddess and a goddess associated with fertility. And this being the Cthulhu mythos, those are going to be the negative connotations of motherhood and fertility, which we can all imagine. So the depiction of Shub-Niggurath in Deities and Demigods is basically as a big pool of kind of protoplasmic matter that constantly spawns monsters. And I think the idea of Shub-Niggurath as the mother of monsters is a very important thing for the D&Dification of Shub-Niggurath. Now, there's only one small problem with this, and it's not really a problem necessarily, but this description comes not from any description of Shub-Niggurath, but from a completely different monster. This is Abhoth, a creature that appears in a Clark Ashton Smith story. And the clue here is that we're told that Shub-Niggurath dwells under Mount Vurmithadreth. And if you've been around the mythos long enough, you notice when things have got a certain Clark Ashton Smithy sound to them, and definitely Mount Vurmithadreth falls into that category. So yeah, this is the mountain of the Clark Ashton Smith story, The Seven Geshes. And in that story, basically there's a fellow that gets placed under a series of magical curses, and he wanders around these caverns encountering a series of grotesque deities. And this is also where the spider god Atlaknaka comes from. But anyhow, I think that Abhoth here stands in pretty well for Shub-Niggurath, right? Like a relentlessly creative force, constantly spawning new beings into existence. So whether you want to call it Abhoth or Shub-Niggurath, I think that you can definitely see the idea of life maybe not being such a great thing after all. But this is a deity who protects life. Well, that sounds great, but okay, we are life. but bacteria are life, and our predators are life, and the orcs are life. There was a series, and for all I know, this may still be a thing in Marvel Comics, but for a while, there was this idea of a parallel universe where death had been conquered, and life just ran riot, and they referred to it as the Cancerverse. This to say that there are things that would grow and grow and grow unless they died. And so this forced the characters to consider that death was not an unalloyed bad thing, and life was not an unalloyed good thing. Because we often think of being on the side of life as being on the side of mercy and goodness and civilization and all the values that you must have life in order to create. But perhaps Shub-Niggurath is only on the side of life and thinks that one creation is as good as another. So one wonderful purpose that Shub-Niggurath serves in this context is to provide a justification for where weird monsters come from. There are a lot of monsters that are basically just the wildlife of a fantastic world, and there are a lot of monsters that are, that have some kind of origin story for their creation, and we can definitely see, vampires come from when a vampire bites someone, and, orcs have always lived amongst us, and bloodhawks are merely a large and aggressive species of bird. But if you ever really want to make a bunch of weird monsters, and you don't want to spend a lot of time thinking about where they come from, you just say, in the caverns deep beneath Mount Vurmithedrith, Shub-Niggurath just spawns out monster after monster after monster, and most of them are incapable of living. They just, splat and die and rejoin the mass of feculent life that is Shub-Niggurath, but the ones that are able to survive make their way down the slopes and wander into civilization to rampage and destroy. And it just basically excuses you from having to explain what all these tentacle things are. And you can see why there would be lots of people who would want to harness the power of this creative engine, that the ability to create living beings. Maybe you've figured out some kind of spell that'll allow you to hack the apparently random mutation sequence of Shub-Niggurath's creations and create yourself a clone army. In many ways, this would be a good time to use the Deep Spawn, a monster that we explored in a special episode a while back that is also a creature that can kind of clone monsters. And it also helps us see what the clergy of Shub-Niggurath might be like. I mean, I think we can say that the clergy of the Great Old Ones, insofar as they exist within a social context, are taking their deity and making that deity more palatable for human worshippers. You can see that in any religion, right? I mean, your cleric of Zeus is probably going to focus more on the really cool lightning sky guy aspects and less on the sexual assault aspects. And your cleric of Odin is going to talk about Odin's majesty and that Odin is king of the gods, and maybe not so much bring up that Odin hates people like you in general and possibly you in particular. So in the same way, we can definitely see the clergy of Shub-Niggurath talking a lot about life and its value, and they would definitely be healers, right? They're out there trying to restore and preserve life. And maybe it's only when you get into the inner ranks of initiates that you find out the unorthodox views that Shub-Niggurath and her clergy have about life and about having to foster all of their goddesses spawn, no matter how hideous or dangerous. Shub-Niggurath is a great opportunity to focus on the horror of life, growing and breeding and eating and growing and breeding and eating forever and ever and ever. It's a god that loves birth, but that doesn't care so much about what gets born. You can see the ultimate cleric of Shub-Niggurath, his body a paradise for parasites covered in fungal infections, a breeding ground for diseases which are as alive as he is and therefore as important. Going out and just wailing on the undead, right? They would hate the undead more than anything else, these creatures that ape the semblance of life. Might hate constructs as well, right? And certainly in my D&D campaign, those were the particular hatreds of the life. Both the life and the death deities, who were said to be brother and sister, hated undead as being, a blasphemy against the separation of the two things, but also the life domain hated constructs. They hated artificial life as being, contrary to their primal traditions. But this is all just based on the idea that Shub-Niggurath is a primal fertility deity, and that is something that we have because it's one of the only things that we know about her, and therefore we've taken it and assumed that that's the totality of what this god is interested in. But it may be that there's more. For example, Shub-Niggurath is compared to Astarte. Well, Astarte, as we will see when we get to Babylonian mythology, does have some of those aspects, but is also goddess of a lot of other different things. So we might definitely find that the cult of Shub-Niggurath has a more complicated initiatory system, and that there's more to it than just being a factory for healbots at low levels and prize weirdos at higher levels. Shub-Niggurath is often associated with a group of monsters who don't appear in the Deities and Demigods book, called The Dark Young of Shub-Niggurath, and they're based on a story by Robert Bloch. And they basically look a bit like trees. I don't mean that they are tree-like, like they're not tree ants or anything like that, but just that they have long tentacles up top, which look a bit like branches, and then they have hoofed legs at the bottom, which might look a bit like the roots of a banyan tree. And I think that the tree is a good symbol here, because it's another symbol of the strength and resilience of life. And again, I don't think the Dark Young are intelligent in any way. Later Call of Cthulhu gaming material have tended to give Shub-Niggurath intelligent servitors. And I think that it would be easy to adapt quite a lot of D&D monster races into the kind of creatures that would serve this deity. In the Deities and Demigods book, Shub-Niggurath creates beings according to a very brief D6 table, basically creating beasts from the Cthulhu Mythos section of Deities and Demigods. But the illustration that accompanies it is, can I just say again, I know I've said it, but what a marvelous job Errol Otis does illustrating this section. Otis's Shub-Niggurath is grotesque, but delightful at the same time, and the creatures splashing into that pool-like monster and also crawling out of it are all varied, you know, no two of them are really alike, and They just look so wonderful, all tentacly and winged and dripping and with weird bumps and lumps and wriggly tails and horns and antennas and what have you. It feels like this is a monster that needs a great big random monster table. Every monster that you've looked at and said, this is pretty cool, but I don't know that I have a place for it in my game, could easily emerge from Shub-Niggurath. I've sometimes done this where I just get like a big box of miniatures and reach in and pull one out. And then we'll see like, oh, what did you summon? Well, you summoned this. And I think that this would be a fantastic opportunity to do that. You know, especially if you have some real weird, like I have some old Monsterpocalypse pre-painted figures from their Cthulhu faction, or a bunch of monsters that I made out of jellyfish toys that I bought at a zoo gift shop, or things like that. I think this would be the perfect opportunity, right? Like, oh, Shub-Niggurath spawns a bunch of floating jellyfish-like creatures whose float sacks are full of flammable gas, so watch it with the fireballs. I think that's a wonderful opportunity. And I think it's a real shame to confine that type of encounter merely to the caverns beneath Mount Vormithadreth. I think it would be a lot of fun to have people stealing little bits of Shub-Niggurath to create their own horrid monster factories. And maybe, you know, maybe they think they have some kind of mold that they can pour Shub-Niggurath's primal ooze into, and it'll turn into Ochugs or whatever. Ochugs. 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 Monsters. It's very weird to me that Shub-Niggurath is described here as chaotic evil. I think this is an archetypally chaotic neutral deity. Shub-Niggurath absolutely has no rules, no plans, no systems, no need for the boundaries and conventions of civilization, but at the same time, life is neutral. Shub-Niggurath is going to create a monster, and that monster might not be intelligent, and it might eat you, or it might leave you alone. It's just the way it is. And who's to say that it's better that you eat the bear than that the bear eats you? You're both alive, you both need to live. Life's like that. I think that's a very neutral position to have, and I think it's, you know, you can stick a lot of evil-sounding adjectives onto Shub-Niggurath, but I think it's hard to see what exactly is evil about it. I think it could actually be really interesting to have Shub-Niggurath as a, you know, maybe not a benevolent entity, but certainly a neutral one in your D&D game, and just have the players be incredibly grossed out by this monstrous thing with its tentacles and its big pool of goo and what have you. But actually, you know, that's just your squeamish reaction to the realities of life. Shub-Niggurath is making life, and you may not think that that's decorous, but that's a problem in your lawful neutral nonsense, not in anything that the god is doing. So yeah, Shub-Niggurath, not bad. And that leaves us with just one deity, Yog-Sothoth, the key and the gate. So in our next episode, we're going to be covering Ol Yog-Sothoth, and the episode after that is going to be our wrap-up episode for the Cthulhu Mythos, here on Patron Deities, a show about deities for my patrons. Thank you very much for listening, and thank you for supporting Monster Man on Patreon.